Welcome, folks. A very warm welcome. We're going to make a start. Welcome to St. Peter's Barge, London's only floating church. My name is Marcus Nodder, and I'm the senior minister here. If this is your first time on the barge, you are especially welcome. Last year, we started something called One Thing in Common, which was events where we get along someone who's a Christian, who's got an interesting story to tell. We interview them about their life, their Christian faith, and so on. And then after that, at the end, we give a 10-minute talk explaining the Christian message. And the talk today is on the giant leap. And our special guest today knows plenty about giant leaps. So competing for Team GB in the London 2012 Paralympics in the 100 metres, the 200 metres and the long jump. And got the record, the Paralympic record in the long jump. Would you please welcome Steph Reid. A very warm welcome, Steph. Do you have your medal with you?
Oh, I do.
Would you mind? Can I just grab it for you?
Yeah, please.
Oh, it's so heavy. So if you've never seen a silver medal before, here it is. It's quite a beast. Apparently it weighs half a kilo. Whoa. So if you want a photo of that around your neck at the end, do form a queue. Last time I saw you, Steph, you were about 30 metres taller. You were on this huge billboard in Stratford. You're famous now. I mean, do you have sort of people coming and asking for your autograph in the street? And
I mean, it hasn't gotten that crazy. It was actually around Westfield Mall in Stratford. I had one experience of a little girl. It's really sweet. She chased me down and said, "I know who you are. I want your autograph." And that was really touching. But no, I mean, unless I'm wearing shorts, people... I usually get to do my business. Although it's really embarrassing, I was at the grocery store, and as I was eating a chocolate-covered Brazil nut, somebody recognized me, and I thought, awesome.
Many of us here will have been at the Paralympics, so we were there for, I think, the middle of Saturday as a family, and 80,000 people. I mean, it's a moving experience as a spectator when you've got someone from Team GB competing. What is it like being on the other side of the fence as an actual competitor? With 80,000 people?
It is absolutely incredible. We had a lot of work put in just from coaches and from sports psychologists kind of prep us. It's going to be really scary. You got to be okay with it. And I walked in expecting, you know, the worst, but it was absolutely amazing. I mean, it really just felt like a big, massive hug. Everybody wanted to do so well, and I actually realized I was a bit of an exhibitionist. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it. But I had a really interesting But before my 200 meters, the last event, I was actually praying in the village chapel with my friend James, and I had this really amazing message from God, and he said, "Stephanie, when you are out there tonight for this final and you hear that crowd cheer for you, I want you to remember and know that is how I feel about you, times 100. That is the amount of love that I have for you." And so that was just a really, I mean, I was, you know, kind of emotional beforehand. I was like, no, get it together. You need to be tough. But that was just, that alone was such a moving experience for me.
And what's it like standing on the podium and getting your medal and anthem, flags going up?
It is so much fun. I mean, it's great at the beginning of your race, but you're still a little bit nervous. And so just to be able to enjoy it and just celebrate that moment with an entire stadium. But, what really caught me, when I got on the podium, I was really determined, you know, don't cry. Just because I'm a really ugly crier. But, you know, you'll have some people, you know, like Sanchez, the guy that won the 400 meter hurdles, you know, just a beautiful tear dripping down your face. Or as for me, it'd be more of a, you know, and it just wouldn't have been very pretty. So I really wanted to stay composed. But the moment that really caught me, I was on the podium and my family had managed to finagle their way down to the front row. And I saw my little brother, he's 20 and, you know, obviously way too cool for anything. But just to see him there, just, you know, cheering totally unabashedly, I mean, it just really caught me that, you know, the Paralympic movement, it caught everybody from, you know, 5 to 95, and that was just a really, really beautiful moment for me.
You'd have detected there's not a very British accent. Steph, you were born in New Zealand, British parents, moved to Canada.
Yes.
Can I just say on behalf of everyone how delighted we are you decided to compete for Team GB? Apologies to any Canadians here, but it's very good news for us. Just tell us a bit about life before the accident. We'll come to that in a moment. But what was life like before? You're into sports and stuff. What sort of part did God play in your life at that time?
I had a great childhood. When we first moved to Toronto, my parents were really, neither of them had actually gone to university, and so they were really determined that we were going to get in a good school. And I don't come from a Christian family, but they did find this one, North Toronto Christian School, and completely sold my dad on, you know, the no sex before marriage thing. I thought, yes, I'm going to put my daughters in there. And so that's how we ended up in a Christian school. And so from a very young age, you know, I was schooled in theology and the Bible. You know, I could tell you all the books, memorize tons of verses. I could debate a bit of, you know, the finer points of theology with you, but that was probably about as far as it went for me. I didn't love the Lord. I didn't really care about what His will was for my life unless, you know, it coincided with what I already wanted. And so it was just lacking, you know, honesty and sincerity. But growing up, like you said, I love sports. I did everything from you know, basketball to tennis to swimming. And then when I was 12, I absolutely fell in love with rugby. And it became my life's dream. I wanted to play internationally. And I had to quit ballet for it, and it broke my mother's heart. But that was what I wanted to do. And things were looking really good. You know, at 16, I'd had some invites to try out for the national team. And it was looking like things might take off with that.
Now, you weren't a prop forward.
No.
A winger, or what were you?
I was a scrum half.
Okay, nice one. Tell us about the accident then. What do you remember of what happened that day?
I remember everything, actually. I'd been invited up to a friend's cottage for the weekend, and they had a beautiful cottage on a lake with all sorts of boats and, you know, a floating trampoline. And we decided that we were going to go out tubing, which is when you attach, it's like a rubber tube to the back of a speedboat, and you just, you know, take off at fast speeds. And obviously the point is to get you to fall off as you go around a hard corner. Incredibly fun. I had fallen off, and I was just waiting in the water, you know, to get picked back up by the boat. And, you know, I remember just looking over the lake and thinking, my goodness, what a beautiful, perfect day. And then the next thing, I looked back to see where the boat was, and I realized, you know, it was heading straight for me, and he was going way too fast. He didn't see me, and you just, you know, you sort of switch into survival mode and you start assessing your options. And I thought, well, I don't have enough time to swim to either side, so I'm just going to, I'll surface dive. You know, I was a lifeguard. I was a great swimmer. I'm just going to get down, you know, low enough to miss the propellers. But I forgot I had a life jacket on. And so that was kind of the end of that. And at that point, you just hope for the best. And I remember just seeing the boat and getting run over and just kind of in a strange two-minute blur. And then when I surfaced again, I actually thought I was fine, and everyone on the boat was freaking out, and that was when I realized that actually all the water around me is red. And, you know, it was really scary. We were in the middle of nowhere, you know, 3 hours from a half-decent hospital, and there was just too much blood. And so they ended up just taking me to, you know, just a local clinic that couldn't really do much. And at that point, my parents had actually managed to drive up, and they were in a bit of a panic. And I just remember being so furious at the doctor, because I knew what he was doing. He sent them in, and they had basically come in to say goodbye, because nobody thought that I was going to survive it. And I was absolutely terrified, because I knew in my heart that if I had died in that moment, I wasn't going to heaven. I had not lived a life that was worthy of the Lord, and I was deeply, deeply sorry for it and just desperate for a second chance. And that was the moment that I prayed my first honest prayer to the Lord and just begged Him to save my life. And He did. And, you know, we ended up making it to the hospital, and I was really fortunate that, you know, they flew in the best surgeon in Canada, and, you know, I had lacerations to my lower foot, or to my right leg and my lower back, and you know, managed to walk away without any spinal damage, any permanent internal damage. And I was thinking, awesome, you know, God is amazing and this is going to work out really well. And then my mom walked into the recovery room and yeah, she was just so sad. And I didn't really understand what was going on until she walked over to me and said, "Yeah, Stephanie, I'm so sorry, but the doctors did everything they could to save your foot, but in the end they had to amputate." And I was absolutely devastated. On the one hand, I was so thankful to still be alive, but at the same time, I wasn't sure that I wanted to experience life as an amputee. I didn't want to, you know, have to give up on my dream, you know, to be a professional athlete. I didn't want, you know, as a 16-year-old girl, I didn't want to spend the rest of my life looking differently from everyone else. And I really, really had to wrestle with my faith with the Lord and decide if I really trusted him.
So was there a turning point for you then? I think you mentioned before that you felt quite angry at that point. So
I was in such a strange place of being so angry and yet really feeling the peace of God and just his presence in that hospital room like I had never experienced before. I mean, you could walk in and you could feel it. But I was so, you know, God works in such, such funny ways. And, you know, he really always does provide. So for the first 7 days, like I said, I was really angry. I was really bitter. I was, you know, horrible to my family. I didn't want to see any guests or any friends. People had driven 2 hours to wish me well, and I don't want to see you. And on the seventh day, Nurse Claudette walked into my room. She'd been the nurse that I'd had the whole time, and she brought my breakfast, and you know, she put it down for me and said, "Here, it's time to eat." And I just said, "You know, I don't feel like it." She said, "Fine, I will help you bathe." And I just said, "You know, I just don't feel like it." And the truth was, I had stopped caring about anything. But the next thing I knew, she looked me in the eye and slammed that tray down. And she said, "Stephanie, that is enough. I don't care how you feel. You need to smile. Your family needs to see you smile. There is a 12-year-old girl in the ward below you who lost both of her feet, and she can still smile. What is your problem?"
Pretty tough nurses up.
And I was absolutely shocked. You know, I was a patient. And I was sad, and I was sick, and, you know, how can you, everyone else has just been so delicate with me. But the truth was, Nurse Claudette, she read me exactly right. She knew I was unbelievably competitive, and it would really bother me that a 12-year-old could cope better than I could. And so I thought to myself, well, we can't have that. I'm gonna cope better than her. And that just set off, I guess, just kind of that spark or that life back in me. And that was when I realized that, you know what, I may have lost my foot, but I didn't lose who I was. I didn't lose, you know, what made me me. I was still the same person. I could have lost every single limb in my body, and I guarantee you, I still would have found a way to play sport again, to channel that competitive energy. But the best part of the story is, she actually made out this 12-year-old girl because I went looking for her. I needed to gauge, you know, where I was at in comparison. it didn't matter at that point. You know, she reminded me just of who I was and that life still carries on. It might carry on in a different way than what I expected, but it still carries on, and it's still going to be a great life full of joy and happiness.
And in terms of how that affected you spiritually, so once you'd had the operation and so on, where did it sort of leave you spiritually? How did it change you spiritually?
I was a completely different person, and I reached the point, like I said, I was still very angry, and it wasn't like I just prayed a prayer and woke up one day and was suddenly fine. You know, it's not a fair assessment. It took a long time. You know, it was a period of 2 or 3 years, but I made the decision leaving that hospital bed that I was going to give, you know, the creator of the world the benefit of the doubt. And I was going to trust that he was going to find a way to do something with this. And I was going to allow him to work in my life as he needed to work. And, you know, he never once let me down. And, you know, despite periods of, you know, just mourning and just deep sadness, God was still there, and he was right there with me. And, you know, he shared in those moments with me. And I remember just going back to school, it wasn't that I had horrible friends. I just, in those 2 years after, the people that I hung around with just completely changed, and it was because I was different. I was a different person, and just didn't have anything in common anymore. I just wanted different things. I valued different things. And in the end, people ask me, you know, if you could change things, obviously you've done so well. In a sense, are you thankful for the accident and glad it happened? And I always respond with, of course, I want my real foot back. You know, nothing beats it. And if I could, of course, I would avoid the accident if I could. But the one thing I wouldn't change is what it did to me as a person and to my heart. I was given an incredible gift at 16 years old to learn what really matters in life. And it takes some people years to discover that, and that I'm incredibly grateful for.
Between recovery and then competing at the Paralympics, there must be a fair few steps. What was the route to getting to the Paralympics?
Well, so after the accident, I kind of just let you know, my athletic aspirations take a bit of a back seat. I tried rugby a little bit afterwards, but a lot of referees wouldn't let me play anymore, just because the leg that I run in, you know, it's obviously a big blade. It was considered to be a bit of a hazard in the scrum, but that was okay. You know, I had the chance to explore, you know, new things, new options. Even though I couldn't run up and down the rugby field, I joined the math team and became a mathlete, which was quite fun. But, you know, I had a new set of goals, and actually I poured all of my drive, all of my determination into my schoolwork, and ended up winning a full academic scholarship for biochemistry at Queen's University in Canada. And, you know, I had new goals. I wanted to be a doctor, and so I went off to university, and literally 3 weeks into the program, I happened to watch a track and field practice, and something inside of me just jumped out, and I wanted to know how fast I still was. I'd never actually done track and field before, but I'd always been the fastest on the rugby pitch. And so I called the coach and said, you know, explain the situation. You know, do you think it'll be okay if I just came and gave this a try? And he said, well, look, if you are consistent and you show up every day and, you know, you can keep up, I won't cut you. And so I went that first day, and it was probably the scariest thing I've ever done, just because I was in a situation, you know, with these amazing varsity athletes who had been running track since they were, you know, like 9 years old, and here I was with my new leg that I had no idea how to use, doing a sport I knew nothing about, and it was incredibly intimidating. And so that first day, it was just these 50 minutes of, you know, all sorts of drills and accelerations, and it was so hard. But I made it through it, and I was so proud of myself. And I remember sitting by the water bottles hanging out, and then the coach came by and said, you know, great job, guys. Awesome warm-up. We're going to start in about 5 minutes. I just thought, you've got to be kidding me. And that was what those first 4 years were like. You know, it wasn't very glamorous. It was a lot of hard work. Finally, in that fourth year, I just by chance, somebody dropped out of an international Paralympic meet, and I got my first invite, my first chance to get out there. And, you know, I'd always just competed, I guess, able-bodied and didn't really think I was that good. And that was my first, you know, exposure to, you know, just Paralympic sport and realizing, like, wow, like, this is going somewhere. This is something that is worth, you know, to me, I judged it to be worth giving up, you know, a career in medicine. That's how much I value what I'm doing. And you know, I just rode the wave and ended up in a stadium with 80,000 people.
I mean, what's it like being a Christian athlete? So, you know, presumably because you're a Christian doesn't mean you say, oh, you know, after you, if you're competing in some race. So, you know, what difference does it make being a Christian as a competitor at that sort of level?
I think what's, I mean, obviously being a runner isn't probably considered the most spiritual, of callings, but I think what God has taught me is that it doesn't matter. We've all been given different gifts and different talents, and everything that we do, it can be an act of worship. And so for me as an athlete, exactly like you said, God has called me to be an athlete. So in the definition, it requires that I give my best and that I try and win. And so I try and, I want to beat my competitors just in a really loving way. But, I've been given this amazing opportunity to be a witness, in the athletic world. And if I didn't show up to practice every day and give my best, that wouldn't be a very good witness. People would look at it and think, well, I don't, if that's what being a Christian is, it's being, then I wouldn't want a part of it. It's been a tough battle, and being an athlete, it unfortunately requires you to be incredibly selfish if you want to succeed. You have to take in consideration, I need to eat at this time, I need to sleep at this time, I'd love to hang out with you, but actually I need to rest because I've got practice at this time. And so it's really, really hard to break out of that habit, and it's something that I wrestle with. I don't want to be an athlete who also happens to be a Christian. I want to be a Christian athlete, and I still struggle to find ways to apply that. And, for example, in the Paralympics, it's a highly emotional experience. And, when we would have athletes that would come back from our team that unfortunately didn't perform how they wanted to, I had to wrestle with, well, I don't really want to, expend my emotional energy on this person. I don't want to feel their negative energy because I have to compete in 2 hours. And it's, well, what where's your value? Is your value in affirming this person's worth and, letting them know that you matter and you're incredibly important to God? Or is your priority going to be on, your personal success and what's written about you in the paper the next day? It is a struggle, and I'm sure it's one that I and you and everyone is, it's just, you're going to have to work it out for the rest of your life.
I mean, the issue of why does God allow suffering is obviously a big one for many people. Keeps many people from faith. Mm-hmm. What are your own reflections on that question? I'm not asking you to give me the definitive theological answer, but just on a personal level, given what you've gone through, what have your conclusions been?
I think, obviously, a lot of people have said, why do you serve a God that took everything away from you and that broke, ruined your dreams? And it is something that I've wrestled with, and I've kind of come to a few just different thoughts about that. For one, when I was in my hospital bed, and I was feeling incredibly angry and incredibly bitter towards the Lord, I felt him say to me, Stephanie, in the past 16 years, when something good has happened to you, you've never once praised me or thanked me. How are you now laying everything that's bad that's happened to you on me? And I realized, I guess I haven't really done that. The second thing I've learned is that ultimately, God does not prioritize my comfort and my success. God's priority for me is my growth. And regardless of your view on suffering, you cannot deny that the biggest growth periods in our lives come when we have huge obstacles to overcome. And I view this life as almost a training ground for eternity, for heaven. God is grooming me into who he wants me to be. And it's inevitable that it's going to involve obstacles, and I'm prepared for that. And I think the other thing that I've really learned to appreciate, I don't quite understand the place of suffering. All I know is that God is a compassionate God who was willing to be there right in the midst of it with us, so much so that he sent Christ, and Christ died on the cross and endured, just an immense amount of suffering that none of us can ever really comprehend. I'm sure, if Jesus wanted to, at any point he could have said, actually, God, I don't really feel like doing this. Please send angels and get me out of it. Of course he had the ability and the power to do that, but he chose to endure it. And that's because he knew suffering it was going to be a part of our lives, and he wanted to be able to relate with us. So that's where I've come to. And I think I've learned, I might not enjoy suffering, but I can still find joy in it.
Final question, next step, Rio, or do you take it a year at a time?
I didn't want to make an emotional decision after the Paralympics, but I literally knew as soon as I finished, I'm totally in this for the next one. So in the warm-up track, we had the British tent, and we were right beside the Brazilian tent, and my goodness, what a party Rio is going to be. I mean, they're just such a fun culture, and I definitely wanted to be there for that. But I felt, obviously, it's something I prayed about, and I just feel like the Lord has given me a really unique voice, a unique calling, and it's not quite done yet.
We are so grateful for you giving up time to be with us today. It's been very wonderful to hear your story, and you're an inspiration, and we wish you all the very best for Rio. Thank you very much. Just before you head back to the office, I wanted to leave you with a question to think about. I don't know how far you reckon you could jump. I actually got my tape measure out earlier. Steph's record, Paralympic record, is 5.28 metres, which is basically from that wall to about here on this door. Just to give you some idea. Okay, I don't know how far you reckon you could jump. I reckon if I got half that distance, I'd be pretty happy, and I've got fairly long pins on me, long-legged fellow. And, how far would you need to even qualify for the Paralympics? I mean, none of us would do it. None of us would even qualify for the Paralympics, never mind get a medal. And the question I want to leave you with is it like that with God? So do you have to jump a certain distance, morally, spiritually, to qualify for God's team, to get onto God's team, to get onto his side? And if so, how far? You know, what is the standard you've got to jump morally or spiritually to actually get right with God and to get onto his team? The Bible says, and I just want to put this verse up on the screen for you here. The Bible says, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So that's saying that when it comes to getting onto God's team, none of us gets anywhere close. Yeah, we all fall short of the glory of God. Now, when it says the glory of God, that basically means God's character, what he is like, that he's righteous, he's completely loving and holy and so on. It's saying that's what we are created to be like as people. But none of us get anywhere close to that. We've all sinned. We all fall way short of the glory of God, of what we are meant to be like. God's standard is summed up in the Bible in two commands. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And love your neighbor, love other people as yourself. But this verse is saying we're sinners. We don't do that. We fail to make that standard, to make that grade. We don't even qualify. And basically saying we're sinners means that instead of loving God and loving other people, we live lives for ourselves, life with self at the center. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. What do you imagine if when we finish in a moment's time, we go out on the quayside, we have a little long jump competition. And the competition is you've got to jump from West India Quay over to the Canary Wharf Estate. Okay, and you can take as long a run up as you want. Who isn't going to get wet? Yeah, you're going to be sitting back in your office in 10 minutes' time in a pool of wet. And even Steph wouldn't make it, okay? She'd jump the farthest of any of us, but she would get wet as well. Now, that is how things are with God. Just to sort of illustrate that on a diagram. It's saying that we are on one side, and God is over the other, and there's this huge stretch of water in between, and none of us gets anywhere close to jumping across. Doesn't matter how good you are, how moral, how spiritual you are, you're probably much better than me, we all get wet. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And when we die, the Bible warns us that that gap between us and God is going to be permanent and eternal, cut off from God and his goodness forever, and that is what the Bible calls hell. So that is the problem. And the question it leaves us with is, well, how on earth can anyone get across to God's side? Is that it? End of story. This verse goes on to say, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God and are justified by his grace as a gift. To be justified basically means that God accepts you onto his team. You become part of his team, God accepts you onto his side, you're fully on side with him. And it says here that we get on God's team by grace. So it's not by what we do, it's by God's grace, which means his loving kindness, his mercy to us. That is how we get onto the God's side and onto his team. So that means God is gracious to us, he's kind, he's merciful. Now that is very, very different to religion. So religion basically tells you to jump a bit further. Yeah, train harder. That's what religion does. So it says, you know, do these religious exercises, try harder to be a better person. Maybe God will accept you. The Bible is saying that jumping route will not work. It will not get you over to God's side. So getting on God's side, it is a free gift from him. We're accepted on his team by his kindness as a gift. Don't know if you went to the Olympics, Paralympics yourself. We went on the middle Saturday, I think it was, as a family. Absolutely awesome. We're in the stadium there for the athletics. 80,000 people cheering. Saw Richard Whitehead storm from the back to take the 200 metres. And very, very moving experience. We're all blubbing like babies. We actually got the tickets from somebody else. So tickets all gone by that stage for this event. But a friend of ours gave us these tickets for free. Fantastic. You know, what a friend. God has given us free tickets onto his team, if you want to think of it in those terms. So God has given us free tickets into his stadium, the stadium of the eternal kingdom of God. But somebody had to pay the price. The tickets are free for us, but only because somebody else has paid for them. And that somebody is Jesus Christ. That verse goes on and ends by saying that we're justified by his grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus. Redemption, long word, basically means rescue. It means we've been rescued because somebody has paid the price to set us free. And that somebody is Jesus Christ. That when he died on the cross, he paid the penalty for all our sin, our wrongdoing, our falling short of the glory of God. He took it on himself and he took the rap for that. He paid the price for it for you and me. We can't jump over to God's side. What God has done, because he loves us so much, is that in Jesus, God has made the giant leap over to our side. So God has actually jumped over to our side in Jesus, in becoming a man, in living the perfect life, and in dying the death that we deserve. Through the death of Jesus on the cross, God has now built a bridge over to his side. So something like this. So in Jesus, God has made the giant leap to come over to our side. Through his death on the cross in our place, God has now built this bridge over to his side. So a bit like the green bridge you'll have walked over to get here from the Wharf Estate. That is what the cross is. It's this bridge over to God's side. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. They're justified by his grace as a gift through the redemption that comes in Christ Jesus. Just leaves us with a question, what do we have to do? And it's very, very simple. All we have to do is to walk across the bridge. Yeah, it's as simple as that. Walk across this bridge that God has made in Jesus and his death for us. Accept the free gift and walk across. The key thing is, don't jump. Walk. Yeah, don't try and jump across. You can't do it. Walk. And if you're someone who's been trying to jump, you'll know how tiring it is and how dispiriting it is. And all that happens is you get wet time and again. So you keep trying to be morally, spiritually better. You get wet every time, and it's very, very dispiriting. God is saying, the bridge is there in Jesus. I want you to just walk across and accept the free gift. It's what the Bible calls faith. Faith is not some giant leap. Faith is just a simple step, one step after another, of putting your trust in Jesus and his death for you. It's that simple. And it's so simple, you could do it before leaving the barge today. One small step for a man or a woman, that step of faith, because the one giant leap for mankind has been taken by Jesus, by coming into our world, dying for us. Now, it may well be that you may be someone who says, well, I'm not ready to take that step at the moment. Could I urge you at the very least to take a closer look at the person of Jesus Christ? Do come back to the regular lunchtime talks here, Bible talks on Wednesday, Thursday lunchtime every week. Take away one of the gospel accounts, have a read for yourself. We run a Christianity Explored course. Small group setting, you can ask any question you've got about the Christian faith and the person of Jesus. I would love to have one of those metal things down there in that box, an Olympic medal. I would just absolutely love to have one. I've sort of got to the stage in life now, in middle age, where I reckon I probably left it a little bit too late, and it ain't going to happen. God offers us the greatest prize imaginable, and that is himself, relationship with God himself, both now and beyond the grave in eternity. That is what is across the bridge. And I can guarantee that if I ask Steph, you've got a choice here, And you can only have one. You can either have your medal or you can have a relationship with God through Jesus. You'd say it's a no-brainer. All have sinned, fall short of the glory of God. They're justified through his grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus. We all fall short. None of us can make the jump. God in Jesus has made this giant leap over to our side, becoming a man. And through the death of Jesus, God has now built this bridge back over to his side. On the other side lies the greatest prize, and that is relationship with God himself now and for eternity. Why not walk across? If you'd like to take that step, do have a word in the afters. I'll give you a leaflet. But at the very least, please do take a closer look at things. Our time is gone. Just remains for me to say a very big thank you on behalf of everyone to Steph here. If you've got time and you want photo opportunities and so on, and to hold the medal, all this sort of stuff, get your chest signed. Do make a queue afterwards. Thank you very much to Steph on behalf of everyone for being with us today.